with just the first half of the lesson. This lesson is just for men. Okay, so ladies, feel free to check out for a little while, take a nap. We'll wake you up when we're done. No, I'm just kidding. The lesson, the topic of the lesson is mostly for men, but I think everybody can certainly benefit from it. I think men are going to benefit from it more because the things that we're going to be talking about, ladies tend to be doing fairly well already. That's just the way it is. Ladies have their struggles, men have their struggles. But in particular, these are things that men are called to do by God. So in Titus chapter 2, God lays out what we just read, where he expects grown men to be. So it starts off older men. Who are we talking to? We're talking to older Christian men. This is where God expects older Christian men to be. And this is also where he expects younger Christian men to be working towards. Okay? So if you're a mature man, great. This is where God expects you to be. This is where he set the bar. If you're a younger Christian man, this is where you need to have your eye. This is the kind of man you need to be looking to be, striving to be. Anything short of that, it falls short of God's goal for you in your life. So let's break this passage down. We're going to start kind of section by section. Older men are to be, one, self-controlled. Depending on what translation you have, it may say sober or serious. Other versions say level-headed. I like that one in particular, or watchful. That's what you need to be, older men, first and foremost. This is someone who has in control, you're in control of your own desires. The idea is one of self-restraint. I don't need you to tell me no because I can tell myself no. That's the idea. Or self-restraint or self-command. I can tell myself to do the difficult things that I may not want to do, but I know I need to do. I don't need someone breathing down my neck to remind me, to tell me to do these things. I have control of my own self. That's the idea that we're talking about here. So my son, he's 1.5, or give or take. He doesn't have self-restraint, but it's okay because he's a baby, and Lord willing, he'll get there one day. But right now, he needs someone. If we leave him alone for more than a few seconds, he'll basically tear himself apart. He's a baby. He doesn't know what to do. You know, don't eat that. Don't put that there. Don't scream and yell. That's not how you ask for things that you want. You have to ask politely. You know, these kinds of things. He needs someone else to come in and restrain him for him because he doesn't have those skills. He needs someone to be watchful for him. Don't stand on that, you'll fall over and crack your head open, right? He needs someone to be watchful for him, level-headed for him when he's throwing a tantrum. That's the idea. It's okay if you're 1 or 2, maybe 3. But if you're older than 3, this needs to be under your belt already. There are some men in their 20s and 30s and even beyond, they have the self-control of a 1-year-old, and it's terribly embarrassing. Men, we need to learn to control ourselves. If we don't, someone else might do it for us, and we may not like what they do. Self-control. Next is worthy of respect. Other versions say serious, dignified, honorable. In particular, I like how the King James Version renders this grave. You've heard the phrase, as serious as the grave. Hey, Jacob, you're joking with me. Are you joking with me or are you serious? And Jacob says, as serious as the grave. That's what we're talking about. Now, sometimes we can be silly and all that kind of stuff, and there's a time and place to be silly. That's fine. The Bible talks about, you know, how a merry heart is like health to the bones, that kind of stuff. But there's also times where we need to know when to be serious. There's times where we need to have some gravity to our presence. There are certain times where we dare not joke around. Worthy of respect, serious, honorable, dignified. Think of an 8-year-old boy. Do those words describe an 8-year-old boy? If you've ever met an 8-year-old boy, you know that's the exact opposite of an 8-year-old boy. They're silly, they're goofy, they're obnoxious. This is where they excel. This is what they're really good at. But as they get older, they're less obnoxious. They're less goofy. At least they should be. And they become more serious. They become more dignified. If you ever hear a young man say, I want to grow up and be a man who is worthy of respect. I want to be a man that is honorable. You know that young man is on his way. He is absolutely on his way. If that isn't your goal, make that your goal. Make that your goal. Next, we have sensible. Other translations say sane, of sound mind, able to curb one's impulses, realistic. Realistic, responsible, and this last one, logical. All of that is kind of bound up in this word. A mature man is not impulsive. He has his wits about him. And he has the foresight to know that, you know, here's the thing that I really want to do. This would be really fun. I want to do this right now. But if I do this right now and neglect this other thing, it's going to be bad for me tomorrow. I'm going to hate myself tomorrow if I do this. Or next month or next year if I eat this or look at this or whatever the thing is you want to do. Even though I want to do this, I'm going to not do this because I'm sensible. I'm able to look forward in time and see how this is going to affect me, and I'm going to stop myself from doing this. You have your senses about you. You're responsible, you're realistic, you're logical. You can't just sit around and watch Netflix all day and eat Cheetos. Well, you can, but that's a high price to pay. There's a very high price to pay if you do something like that. If you are sensible, if you're responsible, you treat yourself like you would treat someone that you're responsible for helping. If you have a little baby, you're babysitting, or a friend who needs help, you probably are not going to let your baby sit around and watch cartoons all day long and eat nothing but Cheetos, right? They'll brush their teeth. They'll wash their face. They'll do all the things that they should do. Maybe they get to watch a little bit of TV, but they're going to do the things they need to do, the things that are good for them first and foremost. Next, we have sound in faith. Other versions say sound in the faith. Sound not as in noise, but as in safe and sound. The idea here is a word of wholeness, free from rot, free from sickness, uncorrupt. If a building is sound, so like say this building is unsound. Maybe I'm walking around here and my foot goes through the floor. It's unsound. Or I try to lean against the wall and my hand goes through the wall. It's an unsound building. We don't want to be in this building when the wind starts blowing. If there's a hurricane, you want to get away from the building. You don't want to be near the outside of the building because it could fall on you, right? But if you have a sound building, it has a good foundation. It is deep and well-founded. It doesn't matter how hard the hurricane blows, we're going to sleep just fine. The lights might go out, but who cares? The building is sound, and this is the illustration that God is giving us in regards to our faith. If you are sound in the faith, your knowledge of the Bible is deep. It is strong. The winds of atheism, denominationalism, temptation, compromise, these things won't move you. You have no problem studying these things, talking about these things, because you're confident that you're right. And if you're not right, you don't care, because you will get right if you talk to someone and they correct you. You're not worried about these things. You are deeply rooted in the faith. Love. Next is love. In the Greek, this is agape. This is true, selfless love. It is manly to show love. To love is Christ's love, completely, selflessly, and sacrificially. If you'd like to learn more about that, Ephesians 5 has a lot more to say about that. Finally, we have endurance. Other versions say patience, perseverance, constancy, or steadfastness. The mature man doesn't act like this every once in a while. The mature man doesn't act like this 6 days out of the week. The mature man doesn't act like this only when there's other people around, or only when he's not stuck in traffic. The mature man acts like this steadfastly. Constantly, you are the man that people go to when things turn sideways. When things turn upside down and the wheels fall off and there's catastrophe, you are the man that people look to. You are the man that people count on. This is the blueprint that God gives us of manliness. This is who He expects us to be as mature men. So now we'll begin with the young men. Where do we start? This is kind of, a lot of times the ladies will read the Proverbs 31 woman and they say, oh, you know, this is just too much. How do we even begin? Men, young men, this is where we start. Where do we start? Desire to grow up and take responsibility. This is the only thing you need to remember this whole lesson. Desire to grow up and take responsibility. There's a temptation for men and women, for that matter, to not grow up, to not want to grow up, but men tend to be particularly susceptible to this. If for no other reason than as young men, we need to be learning how to take the lead. And if we don't grow up, that has terrible consequences for the future. So it's particularly heinous for men if they don't grow up, because we're supposed to be taking the lead and helping others get there as well. Refusing to grow up, refusing to take responsibility, refusal to own our own failures, playing the blame game. This is an abandonment of manhood. If we see it like this, we're not going to point fingers. Pointing a finger is an abandonment of manhood, if you had anything to do with the situation. We already know that our culture tries its hardest to keep us from going up. Youthfulness, being young, is seen as a great virtue. What's a typical reaction when someone sees a gray hair? Yeah, I heard a pull it out now or dye it, you know, just for men, hair dye. Now, if you just don't like how they look, fine, do whatever you want. I don't care. God doesn't care. But if you see a gray hair and you want to dye it or pluck it or whatever because you're embarrassed of it, you're embarrassed that you're getting older, stop it. Stop it. God says, do you know how the Bible describes the gray-haired or the silver-haired person? God describes it as a crown of glory. Did you know that? It is an honorable thing. Why would you want to hide that? I'm embarrassed I don't have more gray hair. Not really. I'm getting more and more each day. Maturity is feared. Maturity is feared. Growing up, growing older is thought of as a disease in need of a cure rather than the whole point of life. Does anybody remember the old Toys R Us slogan? I don't want to grow up. I don't want to grow up. And I heard that as a kid, as a young child, and I thought to myself, I remember thinking to myself, yeah, that sounds good. I don't want to grow up. That sounds good. No, but that's stupid. That's false. That's a lie. That is completely a lie. You don't want to grow up. You know, it's fine to want to enjoy your childhood. Great. Enjoy it as much as you want. But fun isn't the point of life. Not by a long shot. The point of life is to grow up, to take responsibility upon your shoulders. This is what gives life its meaning, not fun. Fun won't be there for you on a bad day. Knowing that you have people looking up to you and counting on you, knowing that your life has meaning, what you do matters. If you were not here, you would be terribly missed. That matters. That's what matters. Maturity is mocked. Older people are uncool. Adulthood is a joke. I'm pretty sure that all of the people under 30 have heard the term adulting. Has anybody over 30 heard this term? Two. Okay. Adulting is an ironic way for adults who still see themselves as children to describe themselves doing things that adults do. Okay? This is what it usually looks like. Here's some examples. This is embarrassing. This guy says, I've used at least 6 Tide Pods today, and I didn't eat a single one of them. Hashtag adulting. You're doing your laundry. You think you need a pat on the back? You didn't eat poisonous He's like, guys, give me a hand. Okay, here's another one. My debit card's starting to feel more like a gift card. Not sure how much is on this, but we'll give it a try. Hashtag adulting. Oh, I don't know how much money's in my bank account. And I'm trying to buy things. That's hilarious. What do you want for your birthday? I want someone to pay my bills and take me grocery shopping. Hashtag adulting. What do you want for your birthday? To not have responsibility. You do it for me. Now, I get the humor in this. This is funny. I laughed when I read these. But it's funny. It is funny, but it's insidious. It's insidious. I don't want responsibility. you do it for me. This is the meme, this is the joke of the current generation coming up. It's subtle, but what they're saying is, acting like a grown-up should be thought of as a joke. You're not really expected to take care of yourself. You're not really expected to do these things and be able to pay the bills that you promised to pay. You can get deeply into debt. Who cares? It's not really a big deal. Your mom will do your laundry for you. Adulthood is seen as something worth mocking. It's something I should avoid. Silly, carefree youthfulness is where it's at. But that is so wrong. The desire to grow up and take responsibility upon your shoulders should surpass our desire to remain eternally youthful. Don't fall for the lie. Don't fall for the lie that youthfulness is where it's at. It isn't. You couldn't pay me enough to go back to being 8. Man up. Take responsibility for yourself. Stop blaming others. Stop blaming your situation. Now, some people are probably thinking, well, why should I take responsibility? It sounds like a lot of work. Sounds like a lot of work. I'd like to live without any responsibility whatsoever. Well, you can, but the price that you pay is awfully steep. The price you pay is just terribly steep. I doubt that you want to pay that price. The price you pay if you reject responsibility is that nothing in your life matters. Young men, we need to desire to want to grow up. I want to grow up. I don't want to be 8 any longer than I have to be. Some people will describe kids that they see that are more mature than the age. They'll say, you're 6 going on 60. And that's a good thing. That's a good thing. Don't give them more responsibility than they're able to handle. But don't dare do anything for them that they can do for themselves. Don't let us rob them of that. The meaning of your life is directly related to the responsibility that you willingly take upon yourself. Responsibility equals meaning to a great extent. If you reject responsibility, you will live a sad, meaningless, self-centered life. Perpetual adolescence is emasculating. That's what should be embarrassing, not growing older. Think of the people in the Bible who led the most impactful, the most meaningful lives, the ones we look up to the most. Who do you think of? Moses, Joshua, Isaiah, Paul, Jesus himself. These are men who chose to shoulder heavy, heavy responsibility. Sometimes crushing responsibility. And sometimes they did it reluctantly. Yeah. Sometimes they thought it was just far too much for them to handle. But in the end, what did they do? They took it, and they ran with it, and they did the very best they possibly could. Did they have hard times? Yes. But did they let that stop them? Absolutely not. These were great men. Their lives had great meaning. What they did mattered. Because they were willing to take the responsibility. And if they hadn't, the world would be so much the worse for it. On the other hand, let's think of the men who are just the dregs, like the worst. Who do you think of? Cain murdered his own brother because he couldn't handle. He was jealous. King Ahab, the wicked child of a king. Judas. You don't want to be lumped in with those fellas. These are ones who shirked responsibility. When they failed to own it. We can fail, but the one way to make our failure worse is to fail again by failing to own it. My fault. I did it. I'm going to do whatever I can to fix it. Judas said, I failed and I hate that I failed, so I'm going to kill myself. I give up. King Ahab terrorized the nation, and he blamed, he said, prophet of God, you are the one. It's not my fault, it's you. Cain slew his brother, and God said, here, you're going to be punished, very gently. And what did Cain say? It's too much for me to handle. I can't take the punishment, the merciful punishment that I deserve. These were weak, boys of men. They were the most disappointing characters. They made excuses. They blamed. They failed to own. What does taking responsibility look like? You're convinced you want to take responsibility for your life. That's great. But how can I tell if I'm being responsible? The short answer is this. What are the things that your mom or your wife, if you're married, or your friends, what are the things that they're always reminding you to do? Those are the areas where you're probably being a child. Man up and do those things. If you'd like a few more examples, here's a couple. We're intentionally going to look at little things. Because as Jesus says, if you're faithful in what is the least, you'll be faithful in what is the most, the big things. So some examples, do you wake yourself up in the morning or do you need someone to do that for you? Here's some examples. Someone said, my mom was supposed to wake me up from my nap, but she didn't, so I slept and I didn't do any homework. Aw. This was written by someone who was old enough to read and to write and to post this complaint online. And they probably expected sympathy. So today, I didn't go to school because I didn't wake up and my mom didn't wake me up either. Today, I didn't go to school because I didn't wake up. They'd be close to being on the way. But they're doing just what Adam did. Adam, did you eat that? Well, yeah, but the woman that you gave me. Failure to own up. My mom didn't wake me up for school. I'm going to cry. These are not third graders writing this. These are adults. These are high school or college age kids at the youngest. I say kids because they're old enough to be adults, but you can see they're not. Do you wake yourself up in the morning or do you shirk that responsibility? If you are in school, do you take seriously your assignments or are you the person nobody wants to have in their group? This person says, there's a girl in my group for this project that is driving me crazy and I'm seriously going to be forced to hurt her feelings and I don't want to do that. I've never met someone so lazy. It's even worse if you're not in a group, though. If you're in a group, at least they'll do their part. But if you're not in a group, you're just going to fail or cheat, which is another way to fail. If you're dating or thinking about dating, are you doing so with an eye toward commitment and marriage, or are you doing so intending to kind of play the field and weigh your options? This was an article on the New York Times. The secret to marriage is never getting married. Okay. I remember when Jeanette and I first started dating, it was maybe 12 or 13 years ago now, I was talking to Gary about something. I don't know what we were talking about. We were shooting the breeze. And somehow the topic of marriage was brought up. He brought it up. I didn't. In my reaction, if you want to imagine my reaction, think of a slug that suddenly had a pile of salt poured on it. That's pretty close to my reaction. Ah, marriage. Take it back. It hurts. It burns. Why'd you say that? This is a silly response because I was young and immature, but I'm glad Gary brought that up because he made me take a look at what I was thinking, what my goals were. And I needed that. I didn't want it, but I needed it. If you're dating or thinking of dating, are you doing so with an eye toward commitment in marriage? And if you're not waking yourself up in the morning, if you're not doing your homework or your work at work, maybe it's not time for you to think about dating. You don't need the added responsibility of someone else in your life if you can't even take care of one. Anyway, if you work, are you a diligent worker when no one is looking, or do you need a manager regularly telling you what you need to do? At home, is your room clean, or is your house clean, or would you be embarrassed to show someone your space? It's okay. Sometimes, if it's sometimes messy, you let it go away occasionally, but then you clean it up, you get it back in shape. Fine, I understand. But if it being clean is the exception rather than the rule, you should be embarrassed. And maybe you should invite some people over so you can be embarrassed even more. Maybe that'll motivate you to clean your room. If you can't take care of your own little space, how can you be expected to take care of anything else? God says that we're stewards. Okay. Do you show up where you are expected to, on time or at all? I know there are things that sometimes come up and we can't help them. There's wrecks or whatever, things happen. But men, if we're chronically late, if we're late consistently, it isn't traffic's fault. It isn't your wife's fault. It isn't your kid's fault. It is your fault. Men, it is your fault. If you can't lead your family to Bible class on time, how can you expect to lead them to heaven? If you're single, don't worry about it because you're always on time anyway. That's only for married people. So we need to grow up, but manhood doesn't just happen. It has to be encouraged. It has to be modeled. We need people to show us the way as we grow up. And that brings us to our second and final point tonight. What do older men need to do? Older men, now in some ways, what older men need to do is simultaneously easier, but far more difficult than what the younger men need to do in developing all these attributes that we older men have already. And you're gonna see this and you're gonna think it's silly and you're gonna disagree. You're gonna protest in your mind. Don't protest out loud. You're gonna protest in your mind. But this is what older men need to do. Make some friends. A survey was taken of older men, and there was a question. The question was asked, who is your best friend? And the answer that the majority of the men gave was, they said, my wife. And you might think like, oh, wow, that's so romantic. When I get old, I want to be able to say that. You'd think that, but you'd be wrong. You'd be absolutely wrong. Men are just bad at making friends generally. That's the reason why they said this. We tend to get worse as we get older. It's a big weakness that we men tend to have. You see, friendship is a skill and it needs to be cultivated. Men are notoriously isolating of themselves. We're notoriously bad at that skill. Our friendship skills are weak and flabby. And in particular, they get flabby in our 20s and 30s as we get out of college. You know, in college, men tend to have like a group of friends, a bunch of friends. But as you get older, you lose touch with them and all this kind of stuff. And then, we just don't make any friends. So when these men say that their wife is their best friend, for many of them, their wife is their only real friend they have. So they say, well, she's my only friend, so she's my best friend. The women were asked this question also, and you know what the majority of the women said? My husband, I got a bunch of other friends. That doesn't mean that the wives didn't love their husbands. No, certainly not. It just means that they put an effort cultivating friendships, like men don't. If someone sends you a birthday card, if grandma and grandpa send you a birthday card, who likely wrote it? Grandma, right? If someone's calling to wish you a happy birthday, who's typically the one calling? Mama, right? If someone's inviting you over, Who's really the one inviting you over? The wife. Women just tend to be far better at this. Men, we need to get our act together. We just absolutely need to get our act together. There's two reasons, though. I'm not just making this up. There's two reasons men should be more concerned with their friendships. One, we need people in our lives that we respect who can help guide us and tell us when we're going off the rails and don't realize it. It's hard for men to receive correction a lot of times. In order for a man, especially an older man, there's warnings in the Bible about how we correct older men. You can't be a young man and correct an older man. The Bible says don't do that. Did you know that? Older men, for whatever reason, they need someone, they need a peer, someone they see as a peer, someone they respect. That's the only person that can correct an older man a lot of times. It's unfortunate. I wish that wasn't the case. But sometimes we go off the rails and we don't realize it. And reason number two, younger men need our wisdom and experience to encourage them to grow up to be men. So number one, we need people to help guide us when we start to go off the rails. Probably a good percentage of men are thinking that this doesn't apply to them. I'm not going to go off the rails. I'm fine. I don't need any help. I've got it on my own. Two verses for you. Proverbs chapter 18 and verse 1. A man who isolates himself pursues selfish desires. He rebels against all sound wisdom. Number two, Ecclesiastes 4, 9 and 10. Two are better than one because if either falls, his companion can lift him up. But pity, other versions say, woe to the one who falls without another to lift him up. For a great example, let's look at the man after God's own heart, King David. In 2 Samuel, let's flip over very quickly to 2 Samuel chapter 23. In 2 Samuel chapter 23, we have a list of David's closest friends. These are men that he respects. These are his mighty men. These are people that he fought with and bled with, and many of them died in his care, in his presence. These are the people that David most respects. If anybody can possibly correct David, it's these people. If you're not one of these people, probably you have no chance at correcting David unless God intervenes. That's what we find happening. Let's flip back in 2 Samuel to 2 Samuel chapter 11. 2 Samuel chapter 11, this is where David gets himself into possibly the worst sin of his entire life. And the circumstances are very interesting. Let's look at verse 1. Verse 1, 2 Samuel chapter 11, verse 1, it starts off, "It happened." Whenever you see that phrase, "it happened," in the Bible, almost always something terrible is about to happen or something terrible just happened. So 2 Samuel chapter 11, verse 1 says, "It happened in the spring of the year at the time when kings go out to battle." What happened? David sent Joab and the rest of his mighty men out to go fight a war, but David remained at Jerusalem. There's a foreshadowing. Verse 2, it says it again. "Then it happened." There it is. "One evening that David arose from his bed, walked on the roof of the king's house, and from the roof he saw a woman bathing." David, we don't need to be looking at this. Let's go back inside. Let's go get some snacks. Yeah, sure thing, Joab. Great idea. I'm feeling a little bit peckish. Let's go back inside. We know that's not how it worked out. David saw, and he lingered, and she's beautiful, and then he asks about her, and he's all alone, and nobody's there to correct him. Nobody's there that is able to say, "David, that is a bad idea. What are you doing?" And do you know that Bathsheba was the wife of Uriah? Uriah was one of David's best friends. Uriah, if you go back to chapter 23, he's listed amongst those of David's mighty men. David, the man after God's own heart, he absolutely went off the rails. When? When he was alone. There was nobody around him that could speak any sense into him and warn him. We know how it ends up, that him who thinks he stands, take heed. Be careful if you think you're standing. If you think you can stand all by yourself, if you don't need anybody to look out for you, if you don't listen to it when people correct you. Number two, young men need your wisdom to be encouraged to grow up and be men. The passage we already looked at in Titus chapter 2, let's flip back there. Titus chapter 2, we'll be looking at verse 6. This has one additional instruction for older men. Verse 6, encourage. So older men are supposed to encourage or urge young men to, and then Paul lists the first thing that was in the list that he had for the older men: have self-control. So Paul says the first thing that older men should do once they get here is teach the young men the first thing that you learned. And what's the implication? Self-control, and then the next thing, and then the next thing, because the young men have to get there also, right? Paul is telling us as older men to mentor the younger. Show them the way to manhood, how to be self-controlled, how to be responsible and strong. To do this, older men, they're not going to fall into your lap. They're not going to ask you. You need to seek them out. You need to seek them out. You can't urge or exhort someone you never see or someone you never talk to. I remember growing up, it didn't matter how bad my life was, and it got bad, I would not ask anybody for help. I don't think it even crossed my mind. But if someone asked me, "Hey, how you doing?" I'd talk to them. Oh yeah, I'd talk their ear off. But they needed to reach out to me first. They needed to come and take me under their wing. And I'm so thankful for the men here when I moved here to go to college. There are a number of men who did that for me, and I appreciate it. I don't know where I'd be without that. Men, we need to reach out. We need to do better about that. They won't learn how to grow up from their peers. They'll learn how to act out. They won't learn how to grow up. They need people who've been there and made it through to the other side. If you're mature, you have something to share. Don't keep it to yourself. And this is what older men are called to do. And the funny thing is it's not a request. God doesn't say like, hey, if you want to, you know, if you have free time, you're not doing anything else, you know, think about, no, God just says, do this. This is what I expect you to do. Just as much, it's a command, just as much as anything else in the Bible that is a command, is a command. Don't kill people. It's not a suggestion, it's a command. Mentor the young people. Not a suggestion. It's not a suggestion. We'll wrap up with this quote. There's a quote that says, dads play particularly important roles in the formation of both their sons and their daughters. Children who grew up without a father are 5 times more likely to live in poverty and commit crime, 9 times more likely to drop out of schools, 20 times more likely to end up in prison. They are more likely to have behavioral problems or run away from home or become teenage parents themselves. Now, you may or may not be a father or a grandfather or right now or ever be any of those things, but you can be like a father to people. You can be like a big brother to people. And these young men need it. Young men without a positive male influence in their lives are more likely to flounder and struggle. Manhood does not just happen. It has to be encouraged. It just absolutely has to be encouraged. They won't reach it on accident. It has to be modeled, and we need to be the ones reaching out purposefully and not letting them fall through the cracks. So to put it in a nutshell, young men, grow up. Older men, reach out. That's the lesson. The lesson is yours. Can we help you in this regard? Can we help you in any regard? Our job here as Christians is to help you make it to heaven. We want to help. We'd be happy to study with you or pray with you or do anything that we can. Would you please let us know right now as we together stand and sing for your encouragement?